Hey, this is former Blue Devil lineman Matt Skura. You're listening to Basketball Conference, the ACC football podcast. Go Duke, go ACC.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC football podcast. My name's Joey Weaver. He's Mike McDaniel. Mike, we just watched the end of possibly one of the best college football games of the year. How are you feeling about the way that game ended?
I feel for Illinois State based on what you guys were telling me. I was trying to get my kid to bed. I was following the tweets, which were insane, very back and forth. It sounded like late fourth quarter, early overtime, so I can speak to it better than you guys can. But
it's okay, Noah. We couldn't sleep either.
Noah took a late nap this afternoon, slept till 5:30, and then decided he just simply was not going to go to bed tonight. So
been
there. That was good. That was good. I will say the Illinois State has Montana State in 4th and 10 and out of a timeout, leaves a guy wide open on a corner route. I mean, that's tough. White guy named Taco. I mean, that's how you're going to lose the national championship. It's tough.
It's the FCS national championship. Actually, it makes a lot more sense when you put it that way.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, we got producer Scott with us in the house. Producer Scott, how you doing?
That was the best football game I've watched all year.
It was a banger.
Happy to be back, Scott, on the show.
Yeah, good to have you back. Maybe we'll keep this show like between the lines for some amount of time tonight.
Probably not. I mean, probably not.
From last time. Yeah.
Yeah, more likely to do that this time than we did on the last show that went almost 2 hours.
You see what happens right when I'm not here.
I will say, though, like, we were a little off topic here and there, but and Joey and I were also drinking. But the one thing I will say is that
it's the holidays.
As one does.
But there were like 1,000 games that we had to preview and recap. So I thought we were okay. We did all right.
No, yeah, it was like a total of like, what, 9 total games to recap then.
It was a lot. It was a lot.
It was a lot going on. Yeah, it was absolutely a lot. But here's the good news is I went back this evening and listened back to our preview of the Cotton Bowl.
Yep.
I think we nailed it, Mike. I think we nailed it. We're going to get into that here in just a minute. For now, we are live, youtube.com/@theACCFootballPodcast. It is a couple minutes after 11 o'clock on the East Coast. It is Monday, January the 5th. We are a little under 72 hours away from a semifinal game that the ACC has to be concerned with for the first time in several years. So we are looking forward to that. We are going to recap the Cotton Bowl. We're going to preview the Fiesta Bowl. We got a few more bowl games to recap. And otherwise, we'll see where the night takes us. Probably not very far since we have supervision tonight. So,
shout out to Justin Lamson, FCS national champion.
One thing I will say, producer Scott made the mention before we logged on here that there was a schematic change from Illinois State in the second half on defense, that they were just basically running zero blitzes the entire second half.
With that being the case, zero blitzes, they were just bringing pressure like every. Instead of just like laying back and like only rushing four, they were bringing pressure more.
But even if so, that was a perfect route, I think, to run because it, you know, I think that was a zero blitz on the last play that they ran there on 4th and 10. And he just broke completely wide open towards the left pylon and they hit him. So well done.
Man, he's so excited.
New jacket, RIP to Joey's Santa hat. Yeah, that one probably no good anymore trying to fit that on my head. So we'll probably find a new one for next year.
Head? What?
Mm-hmm.
Tight on the waistband.
I don't know how many size 7 7/8 Santa hats they make, but we'll find out here in about 11 months.
The one thing we can say about that Santa hat is that it tried really hard to provide ample protection. That's the one thing we can say about it.
Yeah. It did its job. It did its job.
Yeah, wait to see it again.
Should we recap the Cotton Bowl here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go ahead and get into that. A Roback regular speed recap. We're gonna recap recap the Cotton Bowl, preview the Fiesta Bowl, and then we'll talk about a couple other bowl games as we go here. So let's jump in. It is the quarterfinal of the college football playoff at the Cotton Bowl, the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic presented by Goodyear or whatever the hell corporate branding they had going on. It is the number 10 Miami Hurricanes 24, the number 2 Ohio State Buckeyes 14. What a night for Miami and for that defense, especially the show that they put on. They had Ohio State and Julian Sain especially just uncomfortable, out of sorts from the jump. I felt like you had the enormous pick six from Keontae Scott there in the second quarter to make it a 2-score game that I felt like really set the tone, and it dug Ohio State a hole that was going to be incredibly difficult to dig out of, given the way that this Miami defense was playing and the way that they were owning the game in the trenches, I thought, on both sides, really. I don't have enough good things to say about Miami in this game. They played their game, and it wasn't like they scored on every drive, but they didn't have to. The way that this game played out, they sustained drives. They avoided the big mistakes. They made – this is a field position kind of situation. The defense gave you another full 60 minutes the way that they did against Texas A&M there a couple weeks ago. Really, really, really impressed with Miami in this game. Just full stop.
Yeah, the defense tells the story of the entire game. Stopped the run, dominated the line of scrimmage. I think that was the one thing about this game, right? It was like, if Miami can hang up front, this is going to be a game that they can definitely play in. And I think that was kind of the question, is like, Ohio State's offense has been pretty good all year. Julian Sain's been really accurate all year. Like, can you win up front, get some pressure on him, stop the run, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They stopped the run. Ohio State, it's not like the best running back room they've had in recent memory, but it's like good enough, and they slowed it down pretty considerably. Bo Jackson had 55 yards rushing, and one of them went for 18 yards. I mean, they really slowed the run down, which allowed them to dial up some pressure on Julian Sain. It was just really impressive performance by the defense. Keontae Scott's interception, the way he read that bubble screen and jumped it, and Sain wasn't even expecting him. I mean, that was just a high IQ football play is all that was. I mean, he jumps the screen and takes it to the house. And it was pretty clear at that point in time that this was going to be a low scoring game unless like all hell broke loose in the second half. That seemed early on like a pretty decisive score, you know? It felt like Ohio State was going to have to play pretty perfectly from there on out with the way Miami's defense had looked to that point in the game. Ohio State, you know, battled back, but I think a big reason why Miami was able to keep Ohio State at arm's length is because Miami did well enough offensively, right, to like hold time of possession. They ran the football well enough. I thought Carson Beck was really, really good. I mean, his numbers aren't like outstanding, right? Like, you look at his like stat line, if you're just box score watching, it's like, okay, that's just like a pedestrian performance. I thought he was really, really good. Protected the football, got them into all the looks they wanted to in the running game, threw the ball really well. Mark Fletcher was unbelievable in this game. A lot of really good stuff by Miami. They're playing their best football of the year. I really thought Mario Cristobal, which I haven't even brought up yet, I thought he coached a near perfect game, which we don't always get. I mean, if you watch any of the other games here in the playoff, over New Year's, we certainly had our fair share of game mismanagement moments by a bunch of other coaches. Dan Lanning going for it on fourth down like 17 times, which I know is his MO, but like, went for it a billion times. And Pete Golding had a few moments where it was like, DeBoer, like, it goes on and on and on, man. And I thought, Mario Cristobal comes out of this round of the playoff looking pretty good with how he managed this football game. So it was a perfect night for Miami. I thought offensively, defensively, special teams was good. It was a very good night for Miami.
Yeah. I that was one of the things I was going to mention, Mike, was if you go back and find the 10 biggest games that Miami has played in since Cristobal has been there, and I'm not sure I could easily, list them off for you, but like, it's like every single one of them, there is some sort of game management snafu. It's felt like, I felt like probably the second best game that he has coached in a big game was last week against Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
This was probably his best. And I think I texted you after this game. I didn't have a problem with a single decision that he made all night. I thought that they coached a very clean game. They didn't make any mistakes. The way that they used timeouts, the way that they let the clock run, decided to go for it, you know, where they did and didn't. Really, you know, and to some degree, like, that gets easier when you're playing with a lead and, you know, you're playing from a position of power where Ohio State is trying to dig their way out of a hole. You mentioned Carson Beck. Very good. The numbers are not eye popping, but he was very efficient. I forget what the stat was. He only completed 19 passes in this game, but like something like 7 or 8 of them went for first downs. Like, you know, very effective in what he did do. He had 7 carries, only went for 23 yards, but that was another like 3 first downs. And that was a lot of what Miami did here on offense. So they just kept the chains moving. They dominated the time of possession battle here, 33 minutes. And I don't think that even really tells the story. I mean, you go look at their drives in the first half. The first one, they open the game with the ball. They go 3 and out. After that, 3 minutes, 52 seconds, 8 minutes and 4 seconds, 2 minutes, 59 seconds, 3 minutes, 26 seconds. Like, they were sustaining drives, killing the clock. But they played a low possession game here and played it really, really well. So I don't have enough good things to say about how Miami played in this game. You mentioned the Keontae Scott thing in that pick six. I will say there was one other small element of that play that probably helped it come to be. And that's that Jeremiah Smith just completely whiffed on that block.
Whiffed.
As good as he was in the receiving game for Ohio State. And if you had told me that he was going to go for seven catches, 157 and a touchdown, I would have had some questions about how the rest of the game went. But that was about all that Ohio State got on offense, was basically just that. Everyone else was having a hard time with any level of consistency. Julian Sain looked absolutely rattled for most of the first half until basically their final drive before halftime, which they missed a field goal, so it didn't amount to anything anyways. Again, Ohio State, they were not ready for the moment here. They were not able to handle Miami in the trenches, really on either side. As you mentioned, Mark Fletcher comes up short of 100 yards, but man, the 90 yards that he got, it sure seemed like Ohio State was having a hell of a time slowing him down. That was a little bit of a sledgehammer running back situation that over 4 quarters just wears down on a defense. Miami's offensive line, I thought, was incredible here, and they got the yards they needed when they needed them. Again, I don't have enough good things to say about Miami. They were awesome here.
We are living in a world, and I know the Sugar Bowl was crazy, like Ole Miss winning the way they did against Georgia. That game was nuts. We're living in a world here where I think Miami might be playing for a national title.
We'll get to that, but yeah, I mean, they've been underdogs in 2 games so far, and they're favored in the next one.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know,
I think they should be favored in the next one, by the way.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's probably right. I honestly have a weird time handicapping that game, and we'll probably get into why and talk about why. There's a lot of stuff going on in and around that matchup. But again, we'll get to that in a minute.
Could it be around the Ole Miss side, perhaps?
It's mostly around the Ole Miss side, yes. In fact, it's pretty much all around the Ole Miss side. One other thing I will say, Miami gets to Julian Sain 5 times. They sacked him in this game. And this is another stat that I thought was really telling. Julian Sain, those 5 sacks, those were his only 5 recorded rushes of the game. And that's a college football stats thing. But negative 42 yards. So, and this is something else that came up. I think I heard Cover 3 on their recap talking about this, and Bud in particular is like, it's one thing if he gets sacked 5 times and loses 12 yards.
Yeah.
You know, if you're getting sacked for 1 and 2 yards a clip, when you're getting sacked for 8 yards a clip, that's how your drives, you know, you go from second and 11 to second and 18 or second and 19. And that's just a totally different ball game, trying to sustain drives, finish drives, that kind of thing. So that was the other piece that I wanted to mention was I thought Miami was really impactful, not only getting the sacks, but to the magnitude of the sacks and the impacts that those were having on drives in particular. Not enough good things to say. I will also, when's the last time you saw Miami play a game? Zero penalties. Not one.
Didn't realize that.
Although well, they were talking about the officials, broadcast. They got into the
swallowed the whistle. Yeah. Swallowed the whistle for most of the game.
I think it was 3 minutes into the fourth quarter before they had a single flag thrown on the field. Like,
yeah.
Not like there wasn't even a declined penalty in the first three quarters.
Yeah.
Much less an accepted one. So thought that was a little bit odd, but you know, not that that's like a blame or credit thing. And if anything, I mean, Ohio State probably got away with a couple of potential holding calls on Reuben Bain and Keith Mesidor as opposed to anything else. So this might have been worse if they were a little bit more touchy on the whistle.
You know, we had talked about Miami going into this game a couple podcasts ago now. We're like, oh, anything under 10. You and I both said anything under 10. Oh, I kind of like Ohio State there. Mm. And then we sat on it for a while. And then, buddy, on that preview, like you mentioned, we nailed it. Like, not to toot our own horn, because we're wrong a lot. And the way this game played out, we were right about this one when push came to shove and it was time for us to actually pick the game. The only thing that Joey and I didn't get correct is we thought Ohio State would still win the game close. That's
right.
But this played out how we thought in terms of like what needed to happen in order for Miami to win the game. I just thought it was almost more impressive, right? In that you get that pick six and that's how you get the separation. You know, this could have easily been a field goal game with how it was looking early on. And the dam, it felt like the dam broke a little bit, and that was the level of separation Miami needed to win the game. And
yeah,
even though it was early, you know, it was in the first half, all that stuff. But like going up 14 there, it felt like everything was going to be difficult for Ohio State all night, even though they do have Jeremiah Smith, even though Jeremiah Smith played outstanding, like short of missing the block on the pick six, which was obviously the most important play of the game, I think.
Yeah.
Incredible.
That was my other big thought here, Mike, to your point, is the game script piece of this, because I feel like it's easy to lose sight of the fact that as Ohio State's chasing this the whole thing, the whole game, and they get it to a 3-point game late in the fourth quarter, Miami gets the ball back with about 6 minutes left, a little under, and it's a 17-14 lead. We realize that only 10 of those points were scored on offense. Like the level of importance of that pick six in how this game played out, like any, you know, in a game of this magnitude and this competitive, like a defensive special team score like that is going to loom large, but this one in particular seemed like it loomed a little bit larger than most games I've ever seen on this level. So that was huge, because again, Miami's offense was moving the ball and sustaining drives, but they didn't convert it into a whole lot of points until that very last drive they had in the game. They kind of salted it away, took a 10-point lead and killed the clock, and that was it. Otherwise, it was moving it a little bit, playing field position, wearing time off the clock, that kind of thing, but not really getting a lot to show for it on the scoreboard, at least. So,
yep.
In any case, really, really good from Miami here. I wouldn't say I wasn't shocked. I wasn't shocked. I was a little bit surprised. I thought the other thing that we mentioned, by the way, was this Ohio State offense had been a little bit less impressive this year than in recent years and had especially kind of struggled against some of the best defenses it played. That it bore itself out again. They really had a hard time moving the ball. Again, Sayan was very uncomfortable most of the night. You texted that afternoon, by the way, and I forget what the actual note was here, but Ohio State's had an offensive tackle, I think, that missed this game. They started a true freshman in its place.
I said tackle. It was actually a guard, but yeah, it was guard, their starting left or right guard was banged up, and they were rotating in a redshirt freshman and like a sophomore that hadn't played a ton. So that obviously, when you're going up against a pass rush like Miami's, ends up being pretty significant. And they had mentioned on the broadcast that they had been rotating guys up front. It was like, yeah, it seems that way.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. I think that's all I got on the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, that is, because this is the Cotton Bowl. Yeah.
Yeah. It's still late. It's a new year, but it's still late.
It is. Unfortunately, we're back to like real life work.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely are as of today, for sure. Unfortunately, real life school doesn't start until tomorrow, so
yeah,
counting down the hours to that.
Yeah, we'll finish up recording, and then you'll get like 40 minutes of shut eye before waking up and taking Charlie to the bus. So that'll be good.
Yeah, exactly. That's an exciting moment coming up. Excited for that. Anyways, Miami 24, Ohio State 14 in the Cotton Bowl, which therefore means that Miami is now due to go play the number 10 Miami Hurricane is going to play the number 6 Ole Miss Rebels in the college football playoff semifinals from the VRBO, aka Verbo Fiesta Bowl in Phoenix, Arizona, or Glendale, or whatever the hell suburb of Phoenix that we didn't go play golf on for your bachelor party. Miami, a 3.5-point favorite in this game, totals 52.5. This is going to be at 7:30 on ESPN. This is on Thursday night, the 8th, if I'm correct. Yes. Producer Scott nodding at me, so thank you for the confirmation there, Scott. As mentioned, Mike, this one, bit of a weird time handicapping it, and a lot of it has to do with Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Obviously, Ole Miss coming off the upset over Georgia there in the Sugar Bowl. Obviously, that coming on the heels of Lane Kiffin leaving and going to LSU, and there was kind of some questions on who's staying and who's going, and I think a lot of the assumptions seemed to be that they weren't going to beat Georgia. And so, like, after that game, the assistants were going to go with him to LSU and start, you know, transfer portal recruiting. But now they beat Georgia, so, like, I think they're staying in Oxford a little bit longer, maybe. But, like, the people in Oxford are a little bit nervous about that because they're getting a lot of time with the players they're going to start tampering with and trying to bring them to LSU. And, like, there's a lot of, like, really uncomfortable, like, unease, I think, in, like, how all this is going. And yet Ole Miss just kind of keeps trucking.
Lane keeps getting paid every time they win, which is really funny.
Yeah.
He keeps getting incentives for games he's not coaching in, which is another wrinkle.
Legendary work by the agents involved here. Initial thought here is that the way that Miami is playing, they look like a team in the trenches on both sides, really, that could finish the drill here and could go win a national title. On the other hand, if I just totally block out all of the context here and all the Lane and the coaching staff and the potential players transferring and whatever all else is going to, you know, come out of that, block it all out and just tell you what I've seen from Ole Miss playing football. This Ole Miss offense and this Ole Miss quarterback and Trinidad Chambliss are the best that Miami has seen in a while. So what does this, is this defense still the 85 Bears playing against a bit of a souped up offense that seems like Lane leaving didn't just totally kill him schematically? And, you know, Trinidad Chambliss, I don't know if that was just the game of his life that he played against Georgia, but like he is looking like he is on a heater right now that I don't know if anyone's able to stop Miami or anybody else.
Yeah. I like Miami in this game because I think Miami's better in the trenches. But the thing that's really hard to account for is the whole Trinidad thing, because he just gets outside the pocket. And then there's an element of kind of schoolyard bullshit to his game a little bit where. Again, his story is unbelievable. He's playing Division II football. He comes in to be the backup to Austin Simmons, ends up. Simmons gets hurt, I think, right? And then he ends up starting over him, or Simmons was just ineffective. I can't remember, but takes over pretty early on in the year and then just keeps the job. Hurt. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if he like pulled a hammy or what it was. It was something that he could have come back from and just wasn't allowed to, basically, because Trinidad was
dominating. He was too good. Yeah. He was too good. Simmons got like banged up and Trinidad started playing, and then he was just too good to bench. And Simmons, I mean, they paid him some money in the portal too. I mean, it wasn't like, yeah, I mean, they're not breaking the bank for Trinidad Chambliss coming up from D2. He's coming up to be the backup and make a little money, and he ends up making a little money, and now you're playing for a spot in the national championship. Insane. He's unbelievable. I mean, he gets outside the pocket. He does some stuff I haven't seen since. I mean, he's got a lot of Manziel to him. A lot of Manziel to him. Gets outside the pocket and what he can do with his arm. And he made, I mean, it's not like he's just like heave and hope. Like, he's making some throws too, buddy. Like,
oh yeah,
he's rolling out and he's dropping dimes. I mean, this isn't like just like a luck, like running into a lucky situation here. I mean, he's playing unbelievable football.
I don't know if they ran like 30 plays after halftime, like in the second half of that Sugar Bowl. If you can just find those 30 plays that you can watch, I mean, good Lord. Like, he completed like 13 straight passes. He had the Johnny Manziel like run around and kind of like shovel pass somehow past the defense and got a first down. He had the run around, found a running back and converted a first down, extended the drive. Like, it was like one of these, like, he's like unconscious in the second half of that game, the way that he was just seeing it, seeing the Matrix. It was incredible.
They're the old school like NBA Jam video games. Oh, he's on fire. I mean, that's what was happening here.
He's shooting from three quarter court and can't miss. It felt
right.
Like
he just... right. Yeah. I mean, he's just playing out of his mind. I wanted to see what. Yeah. See, that's what I thought. So you would think with how often he was escaping the pocket that he was doing a bunch of stuff with his legs, like running the ball really well. I mean, he's always rolling out to throw. He's always escaping the pocket to throw. Whereas when he extends plays, whereas the opposing quarterback in this game, Gunnar Stockton, we were talking in the Discord actually about this. He was escaping clean pockets the entire night. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, and Ole Miss's defense, I thought, played
getting his shit rocked.
I mean, getting
thought he was
rocked,
gonna die out there,
getting rocked. And like, I thought Ole Miss's defense isn't phenomenal. Like, it's fine, right? They made a lot of really good plays in this particular game, but like Stockton escaping the pocket, like the pass rush wasn't that good that you had to like duck down. But he does that in every game he plays. I feel like it just felt like it was happening more often in this Sugar Bowl than it needed to, where he wasn't even really getting to his second read in his progression. He was just doing, okay, if my one guy I think I want to throw to is covered, I'm just going to duck down and run. It just silly. But yeah, I mean, Chambliss escapes the throw, and I think that's one element in this game. If you're Miami, you can't, like, or if you're backing Miami here, you can't really totally account for. Now, I think Miami's secondary is really good. I think Miami's secondary is probably better than Georgia's, so I think that probably helps you. I do like the pass rush for Miami in this game a lot. I just think they're going to have more trouble keeping Trinidad in the pocket, obviously, than they did with Julian Sand, who just, he's a statue, right? He's not a runner, and he's not the athlete that Chambliss is. So that's the element you can't account for. I think offensively here, Miami can have some success. Like, Ole Miss is, this is not anywhere close to the best defense that Miami has played against this year. I think they will be able to move the ball in this game. I'm not as concerned about that. It's just like, if this thing gets high scoring, which quarterback would you rather have? Carson Beck or Trinidad Chambliss? I probably want Trinidad Chambliss. So
the run that he's on right now. Yeah.
Especially with how he's playing right at this moment. I mean, he's probably the quarterback I want in a high scoring game. So I like Miami. I think Miami's going to play for a national championship, but I'm not like betting the house on it either at this moment in time. I was a lot more confident taking Miami plus the 8.5 than I am laying a little bit more in the field goal at this moment with the way Trinidad Chambliss has looked.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that you mentioned, something that sparked something that I forgot to mention with the recap of the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah.
The one other thing that I thought about with that game that I didn't really understand from Ohio State's side was the defensive game plan. Because I felt like especially Ohio State's secondary sat back and gave Miami a bunch of room to operate underneath for most of that game. Like their corners were playing off and giving cushion, and it was like, we're just going to keep everything in front of us, and allowed Miami to just sustain drives. Whereas I felt like Texas A&M did a little bit more of like pressing and trying to force the issue. And I wonder if you go back and do that again, would Matt Patricia run the same game plan that he did? Because I felt like it influenced the way that the game played out. And I wonder if Ole Miss might have seen that and said, you know, we need to force the issue, commit to stopping the run, and make Carson Beck beat us with his arm.
Yeah.
And maybe he can, maybe he can't. That's something I think to consider here. This Ole Miss defense, by the way, is like pretty clearly, I think, the worst one left in the playoff, and
yeah,
probably the worst one that Miami has seen so far in the playoff. Mm-hmm. Like, this will be their easiest time on offense moving the ball the whole playoff run. So
for sure,
there's that. But again, it's probably the best offense that they've seen at the same time. So it's a question in my mind. Some of this is probably game plan related. I do find myself wondering, you know, we talk a lot about Miami's front on defense and how much that is in the edges with Reuben Bain and Akeem Mesidor. I wonder a little bit how much of this could be, you know, you could find some daylight up the middle if Ole Miss were to really commit to that in the run game. We mentioned the escapability of Trinidad Chambliss. And one of the things that also got mentioned, I think, coming out of the Sugar Bowl was that Ole Miss in that pass game, they're not really committed to any one receiver. They will spread that thing around and find 4, 5, 6 different receivers on any regular basis. I think that presents kind of a different challenge in defensive game planning on Miami's part. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of with you. I'm leaning towards taking the points with Ole Miss. I have a hard time picking against Miami right now, but at the same time, this feels like this could be a close game, a bit of a coin toss, 50-50. Like, if you're giving me more than a field goal with one of these teams, I'm just going to take it. That's where I'm leaning, is a close game. There could be, again, some late game stuff that comes up that results in a closer margin. I certainly don't want to lock anything up here. The total's 52.5. If anything, maybe I lean a little bit over. I could see this getting a little bit pointsy, even with, you know, the quality of the defense. But I guess the way that I would sum this up is that Miami's offense on Ole Miss's defense is like you know, relatively speaking for the playoff. The Ole Miss offense on the Miami defense is good on good. It is probably two of the best units left in this tournament. And, you know, kind of up to you on who you think is going to win. Some people would say in this day and age of football, offense, good offense beats good defense. But we'll see if that plays out in this game. I don't know. Give me the points, 3.5 with Ole Miss. I can't be on an ACC podcast saying that I think Miami loses this game. So I guess Canes win close.
I'm going to lay him with Miami. I think out of like the range of outcomes, the one that would surprise me the most is Ole Miss winning by multiple scores. I think that's the one that would surprise me the most. The reason why is because I don't think Ole Miss's defense, like I'm coming out of the Sugar Bowl thinking that Ole Miss's defense played pretty much as well as it could against the teams left in the playoff. They still gave up 34 points. Now, I think Miami's offense is better than Georgia's. Like, Georgia, if they can't run the ball, they have a lot of trouble throwing it. I think the game plan is going to be to try to slow down Mark Fletcher and Shamar Brown and try to get Carson Beck to beat you with his arm, but he's been taking really good care of the football. I mean, you could say maybe we're due for a bad Carson Beck game, but like, we don't get those very often. Like, we've gotten them a couple times this year, and it's like resulted in the surprising Miami losses. He's playing well on the big stage. he tends to do that. Like he's played well in some big spots at Georgia too. Like, I don't know that we're necessarily getting like a really, really bad Carson Beck game here. Not against this defense. I think it would have probably happened already against A&M or Ohio State, and it just simply hasn't. So that's why I think it would just be really surprising if Miami lost this game by multiple scores. Now, I mean, anything's, with the way Chambliss is playing, like anything's possible. Like, could they pop a couple? Absolutely. I think they will. Like, will they get a couple big plays in this game? For sure. But I don't know. I think Ole Miss might have some trouble blocking Miami's defensive line, which I think is better than Georgia's defensive line. Georgia's defense is just kind of, they've been okay this year, but they haven't been the Georgia defenses, some of the Georgia defenses we see under Kirby Smart. So
yeah,
that's how I feel. I'm gonna lean Miami -3.5, and I think Canes win by less than a touchdown. I think it'll be very competitive. I lean over. Like, if I'm betting anything in this game, probably over 52.5. But
oh,
producer's pick of the week, over 52.5.
Yeah.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
By the way, we mentioned this in the Cotton Bowl preview. Talked about some of these thin margin games and things that can make the difference.
Yep.
This is the part where I'm not going to talk about the coaching matchup because, I mean, we've got Mario Cristobal and his history, which you've got a ways to go before you beat the Chargers on that, sir. Number one. Number two, you got Pete Golding in game number three as a head coach, and I just don't even know what that's going to look like. But the margin that I will talk about here, Ole Miss's kicker, Lucas Carniero, ridiculous.
Yeah, he's good.
Like, that dude opened the Sugar Bowl hitting back-to-back kicks from 55-plus. Like, a weapon like that, and Miami's kicking situation has been good, but it's not like absurd at the level that Ole Miss's might be. So something else to keep an eye on. I could easily see this being something like Miami 28-27, either of these teams winning 28-27, you know, something like that. I'm going to lean over with you as well. I'm not going to lock it up, but I like the over here as well. I think I will echo the one thing that you said too here, Mike. I really couldn't see Ole Miss winning this game by more than like 10 points without Carson Beck, or, you know, a plus two turnover margin kind of situation. Like,
yep.
Really don't think that they can blow Miami out here without a lot of help. So I think this is at least a close competitive game. Wouldn't rule out Miami blowing out Ole Miss if they can create a couple turnovers, get out to a big lead, and then just pin their ears back on defense and make Trinidad's life hell in the second half. That's in the cards for this game, for a way it could play out.
Miami going from, are they even going to be in the playoff, to playing for a national championship would be quite the come up.
What would be the, you know, we've got the Miami Notre Dame thing is, you know, Catholics versus convicts.
Yeah.
You got to workshop a name for a potential Miami Indiana national championship game. Potential there.
I have a couple ideas that I probably shouldn't say.
Yeah, we'll workshop that offline. Maybe in the Discord. Come join us there.
I'm going to show you guys text right now. I got an idea.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, if you're not in the Discord with us, by the way, come join it. Link in the description. We've been having a lot of fun there, watching the games and so forth. I was somewhere along the same lines in my head.
Okay, good. It's worth. Very good.
Along the same lines. That's all I got on the Fiesta Bowl. Give me Miami to win close against Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss covers the 3.5, and I got the over 52.5.
I would love for it to be another banger, because that Sugar Bowl was, after what we were served up earlier in that, you know, that day, and now the Cotton Bowl was good. Like, the Miami Ohio State game was good on Wednesday night, but the games Thursday leading up to that Sugar Bowl were pretty lame. Like Indiana smoking Bama in the Rose, and Oregon just sitting on Texas Tech in the Orange Bowl.
Yeah,
we deserve that Sugar Bowl on Thursday night. Yeah. That was great game. So
it was really fun. Really fun. Especially when Georgia loses. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was an added bonus. We were 2 for 4 there on the quarterfinal games in terms of quality. So we'll take that.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Mike, you had Miami -3.5 over 52.5 as well. And producer's pick of the week over 52.5 in this game. Should be a fun one. As mentioned, join us in the Discord in the game day chat channel as we will be watching along with this game. I don't think there will be any like live watch along stuff that goes on our end. But if there's one more ACC game this year, maybe there will be. Who's to say?
I mean, I'm truthfully a little surprised we're still previewing ACC games in the middle of January, but or I guess this is early January, but it would be a middle of January if we get Natty.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there was a couple that Clemson played in that were later than this in January, but that was usually like semifinals on New Year's Eve or something like that. And it was around this time they would have been previewing a national title game. So in any case, all right. Well, come let us know in the Discord what you think is going to happen. Again, told you what we think is going to happen. Anything else before we move on?
Let's talk about these other bowl games.
Let's do that. Before we do, let's remind people that the show is brought to you by Section103.com. It is the internet's premier place for all things wonderful Georgia Tech apparel. They've got t-shirts, they got sweatshirts, they got hoodies, they've got hats, they got stickers, things for men, women, children, babies, something for the whole family. Every Georgia Tech fan in your life, they need something from Section103.com. Use promo code GOACC at checkout for 10% off your first order. My brother-in-law loved his new polo and his hat that he got for Christmas from Section 103. Big fan. By the way, one of my co-best men at my wedding, Clemson grad, thinking about getting him something from Section 103. They got Clemson things now. They've got LSU things. If you're following the career of Lane Kiffin, you want to go cheer for LSU now, they got things there. Georgia Southern, Kennesaw State, South Florida, they got a whole portfolio coming out. Go get it all at section103.com. Use promo code GOACC at checkout for 10% off your first order. All officially licensed, all the official colors, all the official word marks, super high quality, really soft t-shirts. I love the athletic wear, very comfortable. The hoodies, great this time of year, very warm, very soft, highly recommended. Last time, use promo code GOACC at checkout for 10% off your first order. Shout out to Steven and the gang. I love this shirt among many others, this Ramblin' Wreck performance shirt, highly recommended. You will love yours as well. Go get it all at section103.com.
Do it.
Do it. ACC bowl recaps.
Let's do it.
Got three more. Let's start with the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl was on New Year's Eve. And then we got two from New Year's Day after the day after New Year's Day.
That'd be January 2nd. Yeah,
that's what some people call it. Yes. The Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, we had Duke 42, Arizona State 39. This game was ridiculous. Absolute banger of a football game. Very back and forth. Really felt for a while like Duke was going to, they got up and then they lost the lead and it really felt like they were going to blow this one. And then they didn't. They won this and it was an awesome ending. Shout out to the Duke for pulling this off. And I thought the ending was extra poetic with Jeff Sims throwing one final ill-advised interception to send him off into the sunset.
Which is kind of a bummer because he played pretty well outside of that. This is the best Jeff Sims game maybe he had his entire college career, potentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His long journey through college.
Storied career. Yeah, the
career.
I think he's going on 38, maybe 39 years old now, but finally done with his college career. Look, Georgia Tech fans feel a certain way about Jeff Sims. If I'm being honest, like, seems like a good kid. I actually think he has a Georgia Tech degree on his wall. I think he came back last summer or something and finished his classes, right? Like, did his best, physically gifted, didn't really have it from a composure and ability to process standpoint for the longest time. But clearly Kenny Dillingham figured something out with him at Arizona State, and he kept them afloat late this year and probably some of the best football that he's played in college at Arizona State. So congrats to him on a good career. And congrats to Duke on winning this game. Darian Mensah was a lot of fun, really good. Nate Shepard had a big day. Very back and forth football game. Not a lot of defense to be played, and a very, very fun watch. Good TV show. Good show, Duke.
Way to go, Duke.
Both teams, Duke over 500 yards, Arizona State over 600 yards. Honestly, you could probably say the difference here was Arizona State, three turnovers, Duke only had one, and that's a three-point Duke win. So, shout out to the Blue Devils. They got it done. Really good TV show.
One of the more entertaining bowl games. There have been a few good ones, but this was good. This one flew under the radar because of the time of day.
Well, and this was being played at the same time as Texas and Michigan in the Citrus Bowl, mm-hmm. basically. I think this game ended. Was it? I mean, that was also a fun game.
It was fine.
In the fourth quarter. Yeah. That was one. I feel like a lot of these, I don't remember this many games, Mike, in the last few years where, like, I don't know that I watched any of them and thought, oh, that team didn't really care. Like, agreed. I feel like most of the bowl games I watched this year, it's like everyone was given a good effort and, you know, looked like they wanted to be there. And there were a couple of them that weren't close, but that wasn't like an effort, you know, want to issue. That was, you know, just mismatches or whatever. Like, this is a really good bowl season, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. The bowl games around New Year's, especially, like, mm-hmm. a lot of these teams had guys who were playing. Like, a lot of starters played. Mm-hmm. I mean, Vandy, Iowa on New Year's Eve, pretty much everybody played.
Yeah. We nailed our lock on that game, by the way.
Yeah, what was that? Under, right?
We have over 45 and a half, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was over at half, wasn't it?
No, it was 14-3 at halftime, and it looked like it was over. And then they put up 44 points in the second half and went over.
A very high-scoring third quarter.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Got pointsy. Yeah, but a lot of the stars played in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Leavitt opted out for Arizona State, but...
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of regulars played this game for the Sun Devils. A lot of regulars played for Duke. It was...
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Do you think that might be the people writing these NIL contracts, like writing it in there?
Yeah.
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 That's what sure I was do. Thinking.
I think so.
Which, you know, I actually kind of appreciate. Like, if you're going to pay them, like, you got to pay all, play all the games. Like,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, short of you're not injured, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forget if we talked about it on here. I think I mentioned it in the Discord, but there was an episode of the College Football Inquirer with Andy Staples, Stephen Godfrey, and Ross Dellinger from about a month ago, somewhere in mid-December, where Stephen Godfrey decided, I'm going to quote-unquote fix bowl season. And there was a little bit of discussion kind of interspersed, but like it was a solid 15 minutes of him laying out like 9 or 10 pillars of things that he would do differently. And none of it's like crazy impossible to implement. It would be kind of a radical change of sorts, but it's not impossible. And it was fascinating, but certainly one of the pieces was pay the players, like incentivize them to play and not to opt out. A lot of other things that he got into, highly recommend giving that a listen if you haven't already. But yeah, this was, I think that's probably a lot of it is already that there is some NIL implications or payroll implications from these schools, from these collectives on bowl games. So I think that's a positive change. I'll give you that for full stop.
Anything that that gets meaningful players in these games that are not playoff games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We can go back to enjoying bowls.
Well, I can't get the image out of my head from the Citrus Bowl. It's the fourth quarter and Arch Manning.
Dude, that run, the touchdown run?
Yeah, well, the touchdown run, and he's over there yelling at his teammates saying, I want more. And like this guy's like out for blood for the Citrus Bowl in a game that they have the lead in. It's like, man, this matters. Like, all right, it makes it for good TV. Like, that's, you know, I guess that's what it's all about this time of year. But anyway,
they were, did you see the post-game press conference with Arch? by chance?
No, I didn't.
So they were asking him about, I think Peyton had played in two or three Citrus Bowls and had some sort of, I can't remember the exact what it was, but it was like some sort of record in the Citrus Bowl. And they had like jokingly asked Arch about that. And he gave like a very professional answer. Like at first he was like, yeah, you know, really enjoyed my time at the Citrus Bowl. Like hospitality was incredible. And then he just like paused and he was like, but I don't want to play in multiple Citrus Bowls. He was just like really honest. It was really, really fun. Like everybody just cracked up. He's like, but I don't, he's like, with all due respect, I don't want to come back to the Citrus Bowl. Like I want to play in a Peter Bowl game. Just really, really
funny.
That's
funny. I think it was the Citrus Bowl in January of 91 that Georgia Tech beat Nebraska to like clinch the national title that year. I guess the Citrus Bowl, I guess, used to be a little bit bigger of a deal than it is now. Like it's kind of fallen down the rungs a little bit in bowl season, but
yeah,
that's a funny little rib on his uncle.
There, pretty good. Yeah.
As it were. And then on January 2nd, we had the Trust and Will Holiday Bowl, where the SMU Mustangs 24, the number 17 Arizona Wildcats 19.
Nice win.
This game wasn't good until it was. SMU got out to a 24-0 lead at halftime. Looked like they were just going to boat race Arizona here, and then they had to get a late stop to salt this one away. Yeah, nice win. Good look for the ACC. Good job, SMU. But they, a solid win. This turned into a pretty good game as well. Kevin Jennings, you know, maybe not his best day,
I'll say,
in this game.
He does that three in the picks. Postseason. Yeah.
Yeah. Not great. Not great. So SMU does enough here. But that's a win over a ranked Arizona team that was, you know, one of the comeback teams of the year, I think, in the sport, honestly, after they were pretty awful last year. So good win for SMU here.
Everyone was talking about how Brett Brennan was going to get fired, and then he had a chance to win 10 games. So quite the year for Arizona. This is a nice finish for SMU, and despite the Kevin Jennings interception issues. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff from SMU in this game. This was a fun watch. It was at the same time as the Duke's Mayo Bowl, where the Wake Forest Steam and Deeks 43, Mississippi State 29. Another good win for Wake Forest. Mississippi State finishes 5-8 on the year, which is, that's a new one for me, honestly. bit of a wacky game here. A lot of bizarre things that kind of happened. Wake scores late to go up 43-29. And the only reason I mention that is then Mississippi State gets the ball back with a shade before 2 minutes, the 2 minute warning. And there was what looked like a pretty nasty injury to Kamario Taylor.
Not good.
Late in this game.
Not like, good.
I don't think they showed the replay. Like this was like immediately get out there and get an air cast on his leg. Uh-huh. Like I think his leg was moving in a direction that it was not supposed to. And hopefully a quick recovery for him, because this was a relatively low stakes situation in a game that was basically over for them to potentially have some impacts to next year's team from his availability. So just wanted to call that out, but got a really good game from Robbie Ashford here from Wake, and another really good showing from the Deeks to polish off what is overall a really good bowl season for the ACC. Mike, I thought, what, they go 8-4 or something like that, and that's might have been including the Miami run that's still going. But last year had a pretty brutal showing in bowl season. This year a really good one for the conference.
Yeah, definitely. One thing you didn't mention with the Kamario Taylor injury is we got a glimpse of former Florida State legend Luke Kromenhoek, quarterback.
That's right. I knew that name from somewhere. I've forgotten that he was in Tallahassee.
Yep, he was. He was one of the musical chair quarterbacks.
That's right.
Anyway. Yeah, nice win for Wake. I'm sure this is Notre Dame's fault and a few other teams' fault that we ended up with a 5-1 Mississippi State team in the Mayo Bowl. But
a pretty good bowl spot.
They were favored.
They were. I mean,
it didn't make any sense. You're
right. They were. They were. And Joey laid him with Wake, and he was right. And I told him he was going against his principal, which I stand behind that. But
it was a good, yeah, it was a good call out. You're right that I was. Made me rethink it.
I mean, it's just it's a principal thing, right? I mean, I'm not, yeah. You know, no harm, no foul. We're all wrong with our picks. I'm wrong. I've been wrong plenty this year. God knows.
I can tell you how many times.
That's okay. Thanks, Scott. I think we're good here.
For those wondering, nobody, it's 27 losses on locks and 25 losses on sickos. But you know, just
but who's counting? But who's counting?
Scott was. Yeah, Scott was.
Scott was, in fact.
It's not like mine's any better.
rough year at the window as a trio. We had to calculate late in the year. Sorry, we had to calculate late in the year. The Scott, would you say you had to win like 7-6? The 1 week you started firing on every single game because you had
the final week of the year. I had to go 9 out of 12 to get the 500. Yeah. I actually didn't do too bad. I went 6-6. I think
you didn't. Yeah, you didn't do bad.
The Sickos picks were particularly good to me, if memory serves, but don't have to point that out. We don't have to get too far into that.
No,
again, we need a Sicko meter next year. Like, how sick is this pick?
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Plus bonus points.
That's right. That's right. Did want to call this out from Rangers King. Could write a long diss about Rhett's comedy of errors in the second half in that in the Holiday Bowl there. This is a good point. And what I will say is that Kevin Jennings, 3 interceptions, all 3 of those after halftime.
Mm-hmm.
There was only one drive after halftime where SMU really like got anything going at all, like got a first down, basically. And that ended in an interception. So they really opened the door for Arizona to get back into the game. And thankfully, their defense came up with just enough stops. But yeah, after a really good first half on offense, they got basically nothing on offense in the second half. And I was back and forth between that and the Mayo Bowl and trying to, I don't know, like pick up dinner. And so I didn't like watch that with a magnifying glass, if I'm being honest. But, you know, it's good to get out to a lead and still win the game there for SMU.
Yep.
Anything else? ACC bowl season. Oh, boy.
I don't care. I'm sick of this.
You thought you could run from it.
You can run, but you cannot hide.
Get high from the sickos.
Sickos picks of the week.
Go ahead, Joey.
Let's say last week, nobody's asking, but I went 2-1. Navy, Cincy under 54.5. Iowa, Vandy over 45.5. Those were wins. And Montana State minus 10.5. They got it done on the field, but just by the hair of their chinny chin chins, that didn't come in. 21-13 on the year. Scott, Utah minus 14.5 against Nebraska. Yep. Texas minus 7 against Michigan. Yep. And Montana State minus 10.5. Also, nope. 15-22 on the year for our beloved producer. And then Mike, Navy minus 7.5. Yep. Rice plus 14.5. Nope. And Montana State minus 10.5. Nope. 23-25 on the year on Sickos. Picks of the week.
Perfect. Now, some of you may be wondering. Some of you may be wondering.
I am.
What are you going to pick?
I am. I'm wondering.
And
I'm wondering where we're drawing lines here.
Can I leave it off? Can I lead it off just for fun? Because I really Please only do. Think I wanted to keep the segment alive because the season's still going, but there's so many things not to pick from college football. So we're going to go outside of college football and get a little sick with it this week.
Hell yeah, we are.
All right. So, but for the one and only college football pick of my 4, I was scouring the 2 games and I was like, what do I want to pick? What do I want to pick? Oregon to win the game by 1 to 6 points was catching plus 340. Okay. So Oregon to win by 1 to 6 points plus 340. All right.
Exact results. Hell yeah. That's a new one for the Sickos.
I don't know. Where's the juice? There's the juice. I was like, if they're going to win, it's probably going to be close. So give me that. Oregon by 1-6 plus 340.
all it took was us starting to run out of games to bring out the exact score total, the exact margins.
Yep. We're gonna step on outside of semi-professional football to the National Football League Wild Card Weekend. Give me the Carolina Panthers plus 10.5 at home versus the Los Angeles Rams. No team should be 10.5 point dogs as a home team in the playoffs. They already beat the Rams once this year. You really think the Rams, with all their injuries, are going to blow them out by 10.5 on the road? I don't think so. So, and also the Panthers, I don't know if there's NFL fans out there. The Panthers have been doing this. Panthers have been doing this thing where they win, they lose, they win, they lose. They lost last week to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So they're going to be on fire this week. Give me Carolina plus 10.5 at home versus the Rams. We're going to fast forward to Monday night. Texans Steelers over there in the Steel City. Texans defense is really strong. Steelers struggle to score. I don't think DK Metcalf. Well, maybe his suspension's over. That doesn't matter. Give me under 39.5.
Yeah, good pick.
In the Texans Steelers game.
Good pick.
And then, as an ode to the name of the podcast, Basketball Conference ACC, NC State is playing Boston College, I believe, tomorrow night. Up in Chestnut Hill. Boston College is 12.5 point home dogs to NC State. So give me Boston College Eagles, 12.5 point home dogs on the hardwood. I have watched zero ACC basketball this year, except for the Hokies beating Virginia the other night, then promptly losing to Wake Forest. So give me Boston College plus 12.5 as home dogs. And that's Sicko's picks of the week, because we don't have much to pick from.
So, look, I'm with you, Scott. I have watched almost zero college basketball this season. I'm probably not going to start for another month, if I'm being honest. But if I've learned anything about college basketball, you're allowed to bet on Boston College, but you shouldn't. That's the one thing I know about college basketball. Not always a pretty scene in Chestnut Hill on the hardwood.
That seems like somebody who's spoken from experience.
I've just watched a lot of Wednesday morning ACC tournament games.
Yeah.
Where my team has gotten into dogfights late against Boston College. For whatever reason, it's always those two teams.
Yeah. Oh, good. It's a Wednesday morning matinee to kick off the ACC tournament. Spectacular. Yeah. We're playing
full house in Greenville, South Carolina.
Yeah. This is an ode to a pick I made earlier this year. I have only one Sicko's pick this week. It's also coming on the hardwood. Pause. Lindenwood. Everybody remember Lindenwood?
No.
Anybody? The Lindenwoods?
I remember. The fighting Lindenwoods.
They're traveling to a school called SIU Edwardsville. Give me over 142.5 in that basketball game. There you go.
What was it? One over 142.5?
Yep. And for those keeping score at home, that's for Tuesday night, January 6th. Happy anniversary, by the way, to all who observe.
Jeez Louise.
Happy holidays. Is that
something like that? Yeah. Yeah. Been watching a lot of Lindenwood basketball here this year, Mike?
I've not. I don't even know what SIU Edwardsville is, or where that's located. I don't even remember where Lindenwood's located. So
what's funny is I think earlier this year when you made that Lindenwood pick, I think I said something like, I watch a decent amount of sports coverage around college football, basketball, all that. Like, I have never heard of that school before in my life.
Yeah.
I think I have heard of SIU Edwardsville, though.
Yeah.
So just want to be clear on that.
Yeah. SIU is Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville.
Got it.
So that's where it is, Mike. Edwardsville.
CU.
Pretty decent Midwest student population, 12,000 students. That's more than I would expect.
There you go. Give me Indiana, Oregon under 46.5 in the Peach Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that sick, but I just I could see that being. What was that when they played in Eugene this year? Was it like 20-13 or something?
Yeah, 30-20.
Okay, so it got there, but I think there was like a late touchdown that maybe put it past that number. I think it was at 43 maybe before that. Either way, I'm sure I'll be right this time. Scott, since you're opening the door to the other football league, big, you know, I've always said on this show, I think that college football Saturdays are really just a warm up for real football on Sundays. So I've watched a ton of NFL football this year. So you can basically bet these like they've already been played. Give me the Jags at home plus 1.5 against the Bills. And give me Packers Bears under 45.5 in a division rivalry when it's 31 degrees at kickoff. Jags, home dog, Bills in the playoff. That feels like a worthwhile gamble to take. Although, buddy, if the Bills are ever going to get it done.
Yeah.
A year where there's no Chiefs, feels like, and no Ravens, no feels like a good setup.
No Lamar. Yeah. Yep. Trev's been cooking, though.
Yeah.
Been cooking a little bit. Yep.
Trevor Lawrence, damn near won a fantasy playoff or a fantasy championship for me.
Balling out, so, man. Yeah.
Yeah. That almost worked out. Not quite, but almost. All right. Sickos picks of the week. You've got, Mike, you've got Lindenwood, SIU, Edwardsville in over.
I can give you guys, I'll give you guys a couple real NFL ones now. I'll just join you real quick. Laying with the Pats. You know, it's been a while. we're laying 3.5 at home against the Chargers. We're just
you that. With the Pats?
We're gonna lay them. It's been a few years since we've the Patriots haven't won a Super Bowl in the 2020s. People forget that. I love
won the Super Bowl today. The Falcons got rid of Rich McKay, Raheem Morris, and Terry Fontenot in 24 hours. That's my Super Bowl, Mike. Just so you know.
Congratulations. They were worried about potentially hiring Belichick because they would have to make another hire in 2 years if he broke the wins record and retired. Glad they, you know, they could have been right about that, you know, but also whatever. I also really like Texans Steelers under 39.5. I mean, it's a good pick shot. So,
oh,
sound double barrel.
Yeah. Good pick. It sucks that the Texans are having to go on the road for that game, but like probably rightfully a road favorite there. My Houston living brother-in-law, who's a massive Steelers fan. He's a massive Steelers fan who like hates the Steelers. Also, some of you guys can relate to that kind of fandom.
It's like
trying to get Mike Tomlin fired for 5 years.
You're a Falcons fan that hates Falcons.
Yeah, I don't watch the Falcons, and but they're my favorite team. What can I say? Like, yeah. Anyways.
All right.
I've got Indiana, Oregon under 46.5, Jags plus 1.5 against the Bills, and Packers, Bears under 45.5. And then Scott has Oregon to win by 1 to 6 points at plus 340. Panthers plus 10.5 against the Rams. Yeah. Yeah. Texans Steelers under 39.5 and NC State, Boston College. Boston College catching 12.5 at home against the Wolfpack.
I guess apparently they're really bad according to the chat. So we'll see how that goes tomorrow night, guys. That's not a big deal.
I'm sitting here, I'm like racking my brain. Can I come up with one NBA player from Boston College? Like when's the last time that Boston College made the NCAA tournament, like made a run in the ACC tournament? It has been a minute.
It has.
If memory serves.
It certainly has.
Yeah, that's a tough scene in Chestnut Hill. So, anything else?
2009 was their last tournament appearance.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Well, before this podcast started.
I'll say. Obama.
Like you were in high school at that point, weren't you?
I was a freshman in high school. No, I was a sophomore in high school.
No. This is the 2009 tournament. I was in eighth grade, so you were in 10th grade.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I was a senior in high school for the 2009 tournament. That's right.
There you go.
Yeah. Giving myself away as an old man here.
And I'm old for my grade, which is why you're probably wondering how I'm like a year and a half behind Joey. But
hold on. Reggie Jackson played at Boston College?
I do recall now that you mentioned it.
Hold on. Wasn't he like involved in the Malice at the Palace, if I'm remembering right? No.
Oh,
that's different Reggie Jackson.
It was Steven Jackson. Steven Jackson, Ron Artest, Ben Wallace. Never mind.
He would have been on that Boston College team that made the NCAA tournament. Okay.
We haven't had a good Malice in the Palace in a while.
Yeah. We're due.
We're due. It's about time. What are they gonna do? Find me?
Yeah. At some point, somebody's got to remind people you can't just walk around saying whatever you think, whatever you want, without any sort of consequences, right? Like Ron Artest, public service. Honestly,
I was gonna say Ron Artest going. You know, everybody was like, "Oh, this is, you know, shameful," and now fans say whatever they want. Now I'm like, you know what? We need more guys like Ron Artest. Something I didn't think I'd be saying.
This Wikipedia page, by the way, I don't know if I've ever seen this. Like, you know, you get the ambiguation. It's like, oh, like such and such movie, such and such band.
Yeah.
Reggie Jackson, basketball, born 1990. There have been
very
multiple
clear
basketball Reggie Jacksons. Just, yeah, it's all right. Anyways, that's all I got before we get out of here. Anything else you want to hit on, cover, talk about?
Good.
It's only been an hour and 11 minutes, so we've got another 45-minute runway here if y'all have anything else to talk about.
Yeah, Scott, anything you want us to hit on for next 35 or so minutes? No? Yeah.
That'll do.
That'll work.
Let's work on getting out of here. Let's go watch a game. I mean, there's some sickos games we'll watch, too. They're called the NFL playoffs, but
Lindenwood, show some respect.
I know exactly ESPN which Plus channel. I'm Lindenwood, sure. SIU Edwardsville will Facebook be on.
The chat that wants awards.
Maybe we'll do like proper end of bowl season Mark awards. Fletcher. Yeah, player of the week. Yeah,
that can be next week's episode after this week because there's a gap between the final. If there's
season long awards,
I like that idea. We could do that
season
too.
Long awards.
Do that too. You have submissions. Go put them in the. We've got a Go ACC Moment of the Week channel, submissions channel on the Discord. Go find it there.
I can make
link
just
in the description
channel too. Whatever.
You could do that too. That's fine. Yeah, we'll do some like postseason and or season long awards at some point soon.
We can wear tuxedos.
But you can.
Okay.
You're welcome to.
I'll present the award.
I don't have a tuxedo.
It's an excuse to buy one.
This is the trophy. A used miniature Diet Coke can.
Miniature?
Yeah, it's small. It's not a normal size can.
Hmm.
7.5 fluid ounces.
Couldn't be me, but anyways. Real Diet Coke drinker over here. Anyways, let's get out of here. We're going to go watch a game. We'll come back and recap it, and we'll see if there's a national title game to preview in our future. How's that sound?
That'd be dope.
All right. At FTRS Joey, at Mike McDaniel SI, together at BC Podcast ACC on Twitter. Come find us on Discord. Link is in the description. It's been a really good group so far. We appreciate all the people joining. We'd love to have you come join us there. The game day chat will be a great place to talk about the Fiesta Bowl as it is going on. So come join us there. We're on Apple, we're on Spotify, we're on Amazon, all those good places you go find your podcasts. Go find us there in audio format. Once again, we're at youtube.com/@theACCFootballPodcast. Please hit the subscribe button. Appreciate all the people that have been here in the chat with us tonight. It's been a really fun show. Appreciate the people staying up late with us here on a school night. Basketball conference podcast at gmail.com is the email address.
Nailed it.
Thank you. I think that's all I got. Anything else before we get out of here?
No, I think we're all set.
Y'all want to come back and recap the Fiesta Bowl and see what comes next?
Let's do it. Might get a playoff game. Or title game. Sorry.
It could happen. It might happen. Very well might happen.
Could happen.
Keep it tuned here. Keep it tuned here. All right. For that guy, Mr. Mike McDaniel, for Mr. Producer Scott, I'm Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you again very, very soon. Enjoy the Fiesta Bowl. Until next time, go Canes and go ACC.